Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Chris Sidorick. It may be Labor Day and a holiday for many people, but here in Massachusetts, political candidates are working overtime, with less than 24 hours to go before primary day hits tomorrow. For many, that included a stop at the Greater Boston Labor Council's annual Labor Day breakfast, which drew most of the state's key Democrats, including U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren, who's facing a challenge in November. Warren will face the winner of tomorrow's Republican primary, either State Senator Jeff Deal, Republican activist Beth Lindstrom, or businessman John Kingston. Warren didn't mention either one of them and instead focused on Republicans in Washington, who she accused of doing too little to help working Americans.
And do you know what my Republican colleagues say? They say, we don't have the money. And I say to them, you know why we don't have the money? Because you insist on giving it away to billionaires and giant corporations. That is wrong. It is wrong.
WBUR's senior political reporter Anthony Brooks was at this morning's event, and he joins us now. Anthony, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Hey, Chris, good to be here.
So let's start with Elizabeth Warren, a major story by the Boston Globe yesterday regarding her claims of Native American ancestry. That's been an issue that has followed her for years since she ran against Scott Brown back in 2012. Tell us about the story, what they find.
All right. So the big question that the Globe was trying to answer was, did Warren use her claim as Native American ancestry as a way to advance in her high-powered academic legal career? And to help answer that, Warren herself handed over reams of her own records to the Globe, and reporter Annie Linsky did an impressive bit of reporting on her own and concluded decisively that no, her ethnicity or her claims of ethnicity played no role in her academic career. It found that throughout her career, from the University of Texas to UPenn to Harvard, she was considered a white woman and an academic superstar who really rose on her own merits. Now, it's true that after she was hired, she listed herself as Native American in some campus directories, and that in some cases the schools apparently counted her as Native American. But according to dozens of people, professors at Harvard, among others, and elsewhere interviewed by the Globe, none of the hiring decisions took that into account.
So as I mentioned, this is not a new issue for her. She's been dealing with this for years, all the way back to 2012 when she ran against then incumbent Senator Scott Brown. You asked her about this and about the timing of this story today. What'd she have to say?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I wondered why she didn't release all this information before. So I asked her, why now? Tell us about the decision to release all this information of the Globe. And here's a bit of what she said.
I finally got all of the documentation and put it all together, gave it to the Globe. They then did their own independent investigation and made it perfectly clear that, look, my family is my family, but it is clear my family background had no effect on my being hired anywhere.
So, Chris, you heard her say, my family is my family. And what she's referring to there is that her understanding that she has some Cherokee blood was family-based information handed down to her from her grandmother, from her mother, from her aunts. She also told the Globe that she wishes she had been more mindful of the distinction between heritage and tribal citizenship and says only the tribes can determine tribal citizenship. And she says she respects that and says that's why she doesn't list herself now in the Senate as Native American.
So obviously the big question here, she's been dealing with this for at least 6 years. Does this make this go away? Does it put it to rest?
In a word, no. I mean, although Warren insists she's not running for president in 2020, she made that point again today. The assumption by many is that she is positioning herself for the run. And my guess is that her opponents, certainly President Trump, who likes to refer to her derisively as Pocahontas, is going to continue to bring this up, even in spite of this reporting by the Globe.
All right, so let's switch gears here and talk quickly about the 7th Congressional District. The candidates were there at the Labor Day breakfast. What was their message today, a day before the primary?
All right, so this pits the 10-term Congressman Michael Capuano against Boston City Councilwoman Ayanna Pressley. And it's an interesting race because they're both progressives. They would probably vote the same way on most issues in Congress. But Pressley says she's the first, as the first African-American woman to be elected to the Boston City city council. She's arguing that she is a movement builder, will bring a different perspective to the state's only majority-minority district. So here's a bit of what she was saying today.
There are a lot of people that are uncomfortable and don't like that I'm in this race. They find it disruptive, and some of them even think it traitorous. But democracy is about choice, and after a generation, this district deserves one. The district has changed. The needs of the district have changed. And given what's happening in Washington, so has the job description.
So, Chris, as you know, this contest has been compared in some ways to the Joe Crowley, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez race in New York. There's some differences, though. Unlike Crowley, Capuano is a true progressive in his own right. And unlike Ocasio-Cortez, Presley is not a political newcomer. But she is part of a record surge of women and candidates of color running for Congress who say the Democratic Party needs to open up and broaden its reach.
Capuano, unlike Crowley, actually showed up for his debates as well.
That's a key difference. As well.
So how is the congressman responding? What was his message?
So he addressed the Labor Day breakfast and really talked about the important alliance between organized labor and the Democratic Party and how over the years Republicans have successfully eroded the power of unions. And he really urged Democrats and organized labor to recommit to working together to help the working class. As for Ayanna Pressley, this is the first time in 20 years he's had a real challenge, and he's taken it seriously.
I have never entered a campaign in my life where I have asked other people to support me when I'm not willing to do all the work possible. When I first heard my opponent, I walked away from a personal vacation. No big deal. It's just that's when the bell went off. And I've been working very hard for 8 months, and I think the results are going to be seen on Tuesday.
Now, our most recent polling, as you know, suggests that Capuano has an edge in this race. But, you know, There are signs that this race is tightened, and as we've said again and again, this is going to come down to voter turnout and a primary election day, the day after Labor Day. Tough time to get people to focus and out to the polls, but it's going to happen tomorrow.
Well, that's Anthony Brooks, WBUR senior political reporter. Anthony, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Chris.
All right, for more on the most significant races going on around the state, we turn now to Lauren Dozensky. She's reporter for Political Massachusetts and author of the Massachusetts Playbook. Lauren, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
And also with us is Joe Battenfeld, political columnist for the Boston Herald. Joe, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Chris.
So let's pick off there in the race between Capuano and Pressley. It's captured some real national attention. There was a New York Times article this weekend titled, "Mike Capuano is in the political fight of his life." What's your take on the race?
Well, I think I have a feeling this is going to race is more hype than actual race. I have yet to see a poll that shows Pressley in single digits even. And she has not been able to afford a single TV ad. Maybe a Spanish language ad or something,
right.
But I don't think she's had a widespread TV buy. And I've yet to see any evidence that Capuano is actually weak. You need a weak incumbent to beat somebody like this. You need somebody to be weak and to be unpopular. He's, in fact, very popular, so I haven't seen any signs that her campaign has been able to take him down a notch. But that being said, you know, a lot depends on turnout, and who knows, if we get an unexpected burst of turnout of progressives, this could be a close race. I just don't see it right now.
Lauren, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because this race itself has kind of captured the national imagination, at least in terms of people nationally who are really, really obsessed with politics and really want to parse what the potential future of the Democratic Party could look like.
It's been called the battle for the soul of the Democratic Party.
Exactly. And to a certain extent, I don't know that I personally would go that far. Having covered this and been being on the ground, this is honestly a little bit more of a battle for the face of the Democratic Party. What does the future of the Democratic Party looks like? Like you guys talked about in the piece earlier, is there a wave of a woman who kind of looks like the district a little bit more? That, I think, is really kind of encapsulating what this race looks like. And it kind of goes back to the national attention. Even this morning at this Greater Boston Labor Council breakfast, both Pressley and Capuano were there, as well as a bunch of national reporters. So there's clearly a lot of attention with whatever happens in this race.
Yeah, we talked about it in our Week in Review on Friday, and there isn't a real strong difference on many policy issues at all. Joe, do you think there's any impact here for the Democratic Party based on the results?
I think there's an impact locally, you know, for the delegation. It's rare that it's unheard of, in fact, for an incumbent Democrat to get challenged by a member of her own of his own party or her own party. So I think there's going to be impact locally. Nationally, I think the National Press Corps has swarmed all over this race because maybe there's not been a lot to do. Maybe there's been a, you know, a brief, you know, in the race, but pause in the race. But I think that, you know, there's significantly, I think Lauren is right. This is the battle for the face of the party more than the actual ideology.
All right. Well, let's come back to what we started the show talking about. That is Senator Elizabeth Warren, a big article in the Boston Globe yesterday, basically saying that all of these questions about her heritage, they did not affect her professional career, that she was always considered a white applicant at all of the schools that she was hired at. Joel, I'll start with you. What's your reaction?
I'm sorry, but an article by the Boston Globe clearing Elizabeth Warren based on documents that Warren gave them does not do it for me. I think until she answers the question, she has yet to answer the question, why? Why did you do it? Why did you call yourself? Why did you list yourself as a minority? Because she did.
Well, she has said that they've had this family lore.
She's white. She's white. She's not a minority. She's clearly not a minority. Why did you, you know, even if she has, you know, and I don't know, nobody knows the question of her claims of Native American ancestry. I think, you know, we can debate that. But even if she is part Native American, it's 1/32nd or some very minute amount. Nobody would ever claim themselves to be a minority in this position. So why did you do it?
But if she was considered a white applicant by all of the folks doing the hiring at her number of jobs, then does it matter?
It does matter. It does matter. It goes to her personal, you know, why did she do it? Morals, I guess, or ethics, I would say. Why would you list yourself? And Harvard clearly tried to take advantage of it because they listed her as a minority in their directories right after. And
yeah,
the Harvard Crimson did a story based, oh, we have a Native American professor now, Elizabeth Warren. So they clearly took advantage of it afterwards.
So the other why question I think that comes to everybody's mind, and Anthony mentioned that he had asked Senator Warren herself, why now? Is there a reason that you think this is the time to try to confront this story?
Yeah, it's always kind of suspect when a question that has been lingering for more than 6 years kind of in this national conversation and even local conversation, why was it answered now? As far as any of us can tell, this wasn't exactly an issue in Senator Warren's Senate race as she's about to face whoever wins the Republican primary tomorrow. For all intents and purposes, I don't think it's unfair to say that these tea leaves would indicate that Senator Warren envisions a more significant national platform for herself. If she wants to attempt to answer this question or have proof to answer this question, there's clearly she and her people see a reason for this question to be asked, right? Like if she is going out to Iowa or Nevada or New Hampshire or wherever else, this allows her to point to the paperwork and the documentation and say, listen, I already answered this question. What else are we going to talk about?
Okay, so I want to, yeah, go ahead, Joe.
No, I was going to say, and this is a change in strategy from the Warren campaign. Before this, they had always tried to ignore the story, and any questions about it were just like put off, like, how dare you ask her again about this? She's answered the question. She's not going to talk about it. But now, all of a sudden, she's giving speeches to Native American groups. She's doing this exhaustive investigation. So they're clearly trying to confront it as a prelude to her running for president.
All right. Well, that is Joe Battenfeld. He's a political columnist for the Boston Herald. Joe, thanks so much for joining
us.
Appreciate it. And Lauren Dzinski, reporter for Politico Massachusetts and author of the Massachusetts Playbook. Lauren, thanks to you as well.
Thank you.
Stay with us. Coming up, how can human workers stay relevant in a world full of robots and artificial intelligence? Interesting question on this Labor Day. I'm Chris Sidorek. This is Radio Boston.